Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. I can just start off by saying, boy, you guys are in for a treat for today's episode. I'm your host, Angela Alberti. Wherever you're tuning in from around the world, around the globe, we thank you guys for listening in, particularly for today's episode. It is a special episode for me, at least, because I have the chance to sit down with Jeff Nugent, a friend, peer, mentor, all around wonderful guy. If you have been in the staffing and recruiting industry, there is a 98% chance that you know this guy or have heard of him or have seen the Friendly Canadian across many different shows. Jeff, tell the audience about yourself, please.
Hi there, Angela. Thanks. It's a real pleasure to be on the podcast with you. As you described, our relationship that has built over the last number of years, It's a pleasure to come in and chat with you and your audience. My background, I was a business guy, and went to business school. And as I'm dating myself, telling my background, I applied to an IT consulting job, thinking that I was going to join IBM or Accenture or one of those kind of companies. And the company turned out to be an IT recruitment company. And that was back in the mid 90s. And with that, you know, I fell in love with this industry. And, you know, there's countless numbers of people that when they tell you their story, they never ever believed they'd be in the recruitment industry, but you just kind of fall into it. And that was my story of how I got into the industry. And I just happened to be pretty good at it, I think, and was able to satisfy and help clients find great IT workers. And that, like you'd said, I'm a Canadian. So in the Toronto market, Ontario, Canada, and we had the large banks, insurance companies, telecoms as our kind of key clients, and grew my book of business. I didn't stay with that agency, as a lot of us in the industry move around a little bit. But after that, I moved on to another large, well, it was a small IT staffing company at the time when I joined them, but I had referred by close friends. So you kind of network and you bump into the next opportunity. And we grew that company. I was there for about 15 years and started, it was about a $35 million IT staffing company. And during that time, there was these trends towards MSP, VMS. And I was the first guy in and said, hey, we got to look at this, and invented a program around MSP, as well as EOR, AOR today, which is employer of record and payrolling solutions. And we grew within, you know, the next 4 to 5 years from that $35 million worth of just pure placement to taking on payrolling and MSP services, and grew to $500 million. And over my tenure and built that out over that time. Then from there, I kind of said, where's the industry going? And why am I doing all this for someone else? And thought, I'd always had an entrepreneurial bone. Even in high school, I had a small business. And in university, I ran tours, whitewater rafting tours that I'd have 600 or 700 people go on weekends away and stuff like that. So I had this entrepreneurial bent and said, I got to do this for myself. I like what I'm doing. But then kind of said, where is this industry going? Because, you know, that was right at, and we've kind of went through a little bit of a investment boom and bubble, let's call it, and it's kind of come back. That was right at the, you know, the dot-com era, where there was lots of money coming into the business. and this internet was happening, this thing called the internet, where you would be able to find people online. And I was always worried to say, well, you know, is recruiting going to be around? And so looked at the landscape and looked at what made I'd had success in the past, and just did a pure play. The company I founded was called Contingent Workforce Solutions. Surprise, surprise. A lot of people also say, huh, like you couldn't trademark that because you named it the industry. And I said, well, you know, when you got Google on your side in the early days, if you own the URL and people are Googling Contingent Workforce, my name was coming up number one all the time.
Yeah.
And so that helped grow the business. And all we did at Contingent Workforce Solutions was pure play employer of record payrolling solutions for enterprise clients. So with that was large enterprise clients that recruited their own people either through referral or their own talent acquisition activities. And they needed a third party employer of record payrolling solution to employ their workers, do government remittances, aggregate the billing, take care of all that administrative stuff and compliance issues in dealing with contract workers. And so that also evolved into friends of Nugent in the staffing industry that started their own firms saying, hey, you're doing payrolling and administration and financing of the payroll funding requirements for that business. Can you do our staffing agency that we just started up? And so got into doing staffing agency back office as well. And then, of course, where we met was in about 2018, mm-hmm. People 2.0. I got to know the founders of People 2.0 and the chairman of People 2.0 over the years through some of my online LinkedIn activities. I ran and still do today manage a LinkedIn group. It's the largest LinkedIn group called Contingent Workforce Strategies. It's got over almost 9,000 members of the group. And I had gotten to know the founder and the chairman of People 2.0. And they were just starting out on an acquisition strategy at the time. And they were looking at a Canadian company. Of course, I have kind of a maple sugar and maple syrup in my blood. Yes. And so I got a call.
And a big Canadian leaf right here on the front.
Yeah. And so they say, you know, all the legislation that's going on and in Canada, can you help us out and look at this Canadian company that does staffing agency back office services? And we did. And in the conversation, the People 2.0 folks had said, hey, you got a pretty good business. And let's talk about the vision of People 2.0, you know, in being that totally vendor neutral, only doing employer of record and payrolling solutions to the different verticals of staffing, enterprise programs through MSPs and that type of thing. And then looking at online platforms and things that were evolving at the time back in 2018. And I loved the vision, loved where they were going, and we joined forces and became part of the People 2.0 family in the early days. And that's
shout out to the People 2.0 family.
You got it. And that's where we met Angela, of course. And
of course.
From there, we of course got investment to recapitalize the business and went on to do a bunch of acquisitions over the next 36 months, eight in total. That took us from kind of $400 million to $500 million to almost $2 billion. Yeah. And then last spring, we were lucky enough to go through another process of investors and sold the company to the Texas Pension Fund, or TPG, who's the current owners of People 2.0 today. So it's been a fun ride from kind of being an entrepreneur to be in an IT staffing, and that's where I got cut my teeth, founded an MSP VMS solution, to then founding a Contingent Workforce Solutions, which was an EOR, to then, you know, getting into that aggregation M&A game that you know, we've done over the last couple of years at People 2.0 that took the, us from relatively very small company, bringing four companies together to who they are today in a fairly rapid period of time. So it's been a fun ride doing it all.
Yeah. And now it's a new hat, right? A new title, a new endeavor that you're taking on.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, you know, luckily, knock on wood, I've been very lucky in life with how things have gone. And so I'm working on projects now that I say. And these projects are, once again, business related. And so a couple of projects we're working on. One in particular, it's very interesting. It's called independently.ai. And once again, now that I had some free time to think about what's going on in the industry and some of the major challenges as we look at the major trends in the workforce, how can I help the industry along and build a business around that? And so independently is a solution that automates the process of determining an employee or an independent contractor for the purposes of government remittances and employment law and tax law. And with that, it classifies them with a really easy to use interface, and it'll help staffing agencies, online platforms, employer of records and clients and governments to classify workers and give certainty that if you're employing a worker, you're employing them right. If they're an employee, do the government remittances. If they're an independent contractor, they need to act and be a small business. So it classifies that properly. And if they aren't meeting the criteria of an independent contractor, but really do want to and have the intent to be an independent contractor, we've created a marketplace of service providers, be it accountants, lawyers, insurance solutions that it's almost a small business in a box. So as an independent contractor, it's often very overwhelming to start up a business because you got to buy insurance, you got to register your business, you got to get an accountant and all these things. And so to have that small business in a box with very like 2 to 5 click type application processes to get in touch with these services with group like rates instead of, you know, individual rates.
Right.
So it makes it inexpensive and quick to set up a business. So, you know, if you're offered a contract through an online platform or want to work as an independent contractor, it enables those workers to do so as well. And then with that, the nice part of all of this is we're very confident in our abilities to make the proper classifications and enable the workers to be true small businesses that will indemnify all parties involved within the contractual relationship, which has tended to be the juggernaut or the issue.
Oh, absolutely.
In the industry. And so, you know, knowing that, we've kind of really took a step back and said, okay, this combination of compliance, insurance, and enablement of independent contractors is something that we're really passionate about in moving the industry forward. As we talk, especially as we talk about the trends, right?
So of course. And some really cool things that you guys have going on when it comes to classification and independently. And I think, you know, I'm excited for the audience. This episode is long, certainly long overdue, but so many different things that we can get into. I definitely want to hop into an independent contractor classification. But before that, I'd love to just kind of set the precedent, right? You do a wonderful job of explaining this, and it really fascinates me and kind of fires me up every time I hear this. But what are some of those trends within this workforce, the globalization of this workforce, that get you excited and really embody maybe what we're living and working through today in terms of future of work strategies?
Yeah, like it's been very interesting to watch how the pandemic has accelerated the business models that were trending anyways, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea of moving towards usage of technology and platforms to help connect workers and jobs and workers was starting to really to start to trend, right? like I joke way back when, this thing called the interweb, right? People were starting to use it.
And this thing called the internet.
Yeah. So start to use it to connect with people and find workers and skills they needed to complete work for their companies. And so that's very much continued to accelerate. And the pandemic has accelerated that, of course, as well. The trend to remote work, right? We all have experienced the last 3 years of working from home. And that's enabled flexibility and also helped us understand what we wanted as the workers and as individuals, that we wanted more of a work-life balance. And so that whole idea of it was starting to trend, the work-life balance trend was coming along, but the pandemic proved the business model. We were all forced to work from home, and we did it generally pretty successfully, especially in the knowledge work space. And so when you start to look at that as a major trend, and that's been pretty obvious, and a lot of people talk about it, but when you combine that with the trend towards usage of technology and platforms, what you're finding is the technology is enabling workers that want to work remotely and work on jobs anywhere in the world, actually, the technology is starting to enable that. And so, you know, the online staffing platforms that are, there's, you know, some of the large guys like the Upworks and the TopTals and whatnot. But there's hundreds of them, and they're all very similar to a staffing firm, but they're a technology driven way of matching workers. But they're, what it is pushing is you can do work for any company anywhere. And so that globalization of the workforce and the client base is really between, you know, that trend. You used to only, if you were Canadian and lived in Toronto, you'd work for a Toronto company, right? Now a Canadian can work for a Yugoslavian company, a Britain, you can work anywhere in the world. You know, of course, time zones is often a little bit challenging, but in general, you can do work for any kind of company and vice versa. So when you think about it, the talent pools have become global. So companies from Europe can recruit Canadians and Americans to work on gigs. And then the other way around, workers can start to look for jobs anywhere, and you don't have to limit it to your, you know, your 30 to 45 minute tolerance of a commute these days, right? So that's been a couple of key trends. And then the, you know, the trend to in general demographics, when you think about it. So what's really driving this, I'm calling it the golden era of staffing, is we've got those two kind of trends in the future work, but the big thing that's driving the golden era of staffing is demographics. We've got the pandemic that's accelerated individuals wanting to work, have more work-life balance in let's call it the newer generations, and then it's accelerated retirement and of the older generations, and the baby boom, which is the massive demographic, are all 55 plus now, and they're saying, you know what, I'm done and I'm out of the workforce. So what has that done? It's created a huge talent shortage. So, you know, all the government spending we had through pandemic drove lots of, and cheap interest rates drove lots of jobs. But the other side of it was a lot of people leaving the workforce. So you're seeing the lowest unemployment rates ever. And people often forget that it's not just about the upside of more jobs. It's actually also people leaving the workforce that come out of those calculations. So when you think about it, it's the golden era of staffing and recruiting, because when you have lots of demand and low talent pools, you're going to need to find people to get jobs done, right?
Yeah.
And so you're looking at
creative ways to fill those roles.
And it's important to use technology and think about a global workforce to get jobs done in any location you're working now, right?
Yeah.
So, and of course, there's physical jobs that they're going to have to do. But if you're in knowledge work, you can utilize work, the workforce anywhere now, right?
That is so fascinating. And I think certainly a good summary, which is why we go into this talk of the compliance, the oversight. Certainly, we all know that there has been a rise in solopreneurs, independent contractors. And not enough is said around, okay, wait, I'm sitting in TA now. I have this contingent workforce. They're working in Timbuktu across the globe. How do I make sure that I maintain a level of adherence and compliance, not only that is statutorily required, perhaps in my locality, but also in this vastly different area of the world that I'm not even sure we have enough general counsel spin to make sure that we can adhere to it, which is really fascinating, especially when you hear about all the things that Independently is doing and how they can really, I mean, what Independently is doing, I think, is at the crux of what we consider future of work, right? But talk to us a little bit about compliance and oversight and really how to properly oversee a globalized workforce. Of course, we get the advantages, but now this is a disadvantage to an extent, don't you think?
Yeah. So what made me kind of make the leap into this? We did a lot of research on and needed to validate the business model, right? Around this, if you're only going to work in a very sliver business of help insuring and indemnifying a worker classification for all parties, it's not the same as, it's not an employer of record type model. So there's Independently, all we do is make the worker classification and let whoever wants to employ the worker employ them and can take our suggestion or not, right? And if they take our suggestion and we say this is an independent contractor, we'll indemnify them. If we say it's not, and they still say, oh, well, we're going to not, we don't want to have to pay employment and tax law or government remittances in those countries, they're on the hook for the liability.
Yeah.
And it's been very interesting watching the convergence of the market with a lot of the technology players coming in. They come in from a, I'm going to disrupt the world perspective, and they don't really think about the consequences until they're starting to happen. And they are starting to happen as we're seeing the lawsuits with Uber and other online platforms and other task-based technology players. They're getting totally raked over the coals by government legislation. I was recently in Ireland, and Ireland, you call an Uber and a taxi shows up, who's a full employee of a taxi service.
Wow.
And so, you know, you're starting to see that crazy change in regulations because, you know, the technology companies came in and they forgot, well, wait a second. These people are people, and there are actually regulations to protect people in when they're working, right? And so to deem them just an independent contractor without a lot of real validation of that, is the crux of what's limiting the future of work of this independent workforce going forward. And so that's what we at Independently are looking to solve that issue, to say, listen, guys, you guys can, you, whoever wants to make matches is wonderful, but you then have to employ them properly according to the laws and according to the laws of the jurisdiction that they live and work in. So one of the things that often is forgotten is if I'm a US company employing somebody in Italy, you're not using US laws to employ them. You're using Italian laws. And so with that, it creates an unbelievable complexity when it comes to, oh, let's just run them as an independent contractor and hope for the best, right? So, you know, with utilizing our systems, we're plugging into the employers of records and plugging into the online platforms and other staffing firms to say, you've got a global talent pool, but this way now you can employ them correctly in the different jurisdictions based on our recommendations of their classification of workers.
Yeah. And that's as somebody, so take this for what it's worth, as somebody that geeks out about this stuff when it comes to compliance and oversight, That is a plug and play, top of the list. You want to take advantage of a globalized workforce. The immediate follow-up to that is, how do I do so compliantly? So kudos to what you guys are doing. I have had a chance to check out the system and the platform, and it's exciting to see how that could soon launch and hopefully revolutionize the way that we deal with independent contractors. And I love the analogy that you gave, American company looking to get the Italian worker. Okay, let's take it another level. You have to get familiar with what's happening in Italy and the happenings or in Ireland and how to manage and oversee that type of workforce. So very cool stuff. I want to take a second to just kind of go into another direction here on the conversation and talk about, if you've opened up any SIA this year, then you know what's happening or what has been the rumblings for the last maybe 12, 18 months is this whole conceptualization of direct sourcing. So two-part question I'm going to give you. Can you, for the listener that's tuning in, give us the framework on what the heck direct sourcing is? And secondly, I'd love to get your thoughts on maybe that staffing agency that's tuning in on how they can pivot into this direct sourcing movement. And I say pivot as in hopefully take advantage of what's happening around us.
Huge opportunities, for sure. Well, it's interesting. The direct sourcing is buzzwordy right now, right? And it is a movement, and everybody's looking at it as we speak as large enterprise solutions. If you look up, we had back at CWS, Contingent Workforce Solutions, we had a YouTube channel. And in February 2014, I did a YouTube explanation of what is direct sourcing and what are the value prop of direct sourcing.
Nearly 10 years ago.
And what we saw as an employer of record platform was more enterprise companies hiring more workers themselves. We saw that as an opportunity for them, and then they could utilize an employer of record to payroll those workers compliantly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that compliance was always a component of direct sourcing. But what direct sourcing essentially is an enterprise client utilizing their own talent acquisition strategies and activities to find their own workers.
Temporary, and contingent workers, right?
And contingent workers in particular. You know, in the past, you saw RPOs, right?
Yeah.
Taking over talent acquisition for large enterprise clients to recruit full-time. And so this is not unlike an internal talent acquisition team or an RPO company coming in and doing those same talent acquisition activities, but they're coming in and now direct sourcing workers that are on a contract or temporary basis. So it's very interesting that the trend is here and there's all these terminologies around it. But if you think of it, if you're in talent acquisition, you already know what direct sourcing is because it's essentially sourcing and finding people, right? They just happen at the end of it, instead of going full-time on a salary like you would with a full-time person, they're coming in and they're working on contract and going through your VMS or to one of your employer of record platforms to employ them, right? And so, yeah, direct sourcing, why people are moving towards it, there's a number of things, but why it's so hot now was the talent shortage. So the first value prop, of course, is cost savings. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the cost savings, you know, I'm using rough numbers, right? But a traditional staffing agency places a worker and let's call it a 25% markup, right? Over and above. So to do the math, if it's $100 an hour worker, there's a margin. The staffing agency makes $25 an hour, and $25 an hour times 2,000 hours in a year is 50K. So that staffing agency is making 50K over the 12 months for that one placement they did, right? So by finding them yourself and employing them through employer of record or even directly, you're saving that $25 or maybe $20 because you're paying a percentage to a payrolling company to employ them on your behalf compliantly. So there's a huge cost savings opportunity. And so we've seen that, you know, MSP models like squeeze staffing agencies. And now the staffing agencies, they can't squeeze anymore. So finding a certain percentage of your workforce directly as part of the program is a good way to kind of squeeze that next level of cost savings. But what is really making it hot is the talent shortage we have. And so talent companies are starting to come in and taking control of their finding their workers because they haven't been able to find them through the traditional staffing agency channel. So the value proposition of cost savings, but really it's this control of your talent acquisition is really important for companies to talent pool their own workers, manage them, and be able to engage with them very quickly versus through other channels, right? So it's very interesting to see it evolve.
And now consider this. I'm a staffing agency owner, yeah. And I just listened to what you just said. My first thought is, holy shit, this is coming. This is here. How do I evolve into that? Or, you know, I know that you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, there was .com and there was even this questioning around, is recruiters even going to exist anymore? I think that same sort of messaging is happening all over again. What do you say to them?
Well, it's interesting. You also heard in my conversation thus far, it's the golden era of staffing.
Yes.
The golden era means gold, right? There's a lot of gold in them.
Cash.
Their hills.
Make it rain.
Yeah. And so why? Because you've got lots of demand and you've got a small supply. And I was a business grad, so I know economics a little bit. High supply, high demand, low supply equals higher prices and more opportunity. And so the golden era of staffing is there. And so I don't see recruiting going away anytime soon. I only see it getting larger. But there is a evolution and a need to think about the direct sourcing trend and potentially look to offer it as part of your service. And really, instead of the traditional staffing model of here's a rec and fill it, this is more of a strategic, programmatic way to go and pitch your clients to say, hey, listen, we can work strategically with you to help you direct source. And so if you think about it, moving in to a direct sourcing solution is very similar to moving into an RPO type relationship with the client, where you strategically move in and say, hey, listen, we're going to help you in a programmatic way where you're going to, you know, tell us and give us all of your requisitions for the year. We're going to proactively talent pool for you and be able to react quicker and get you the people you need versus give me a rec and I'll try to fill it type of model. So if you think about it, I wouldn't even call it a pivot. I would call it a addition to your service offering to think about a programmatic solution to offer direct sourcing to your clients. Because the one thing that I didn't get into when we talked about direct sourcing was a successful direct sourcing is people, process, and policy, and technology, right? In the early days of direct sourcing, you know, there was lots of buzz around the technology. We're going to implement an ATS-like career page for contractors and have our managers log into it and try to find people. Guess what?
The live hires and the will hires of the world.
Yeah, and those are all awesome technologies.
Yes.
But guess what? Managers don't get paid to recruit. They get paid to manage their projects. And what we found in most of the early days, before they added the people to a direct sourcing program, very low uptick. Like they were getting 2% and 3%, like the early programs, like of their workforce was directly sourced. So it was a huge failure. Soon as they started adding people, then all, which they call it curation in direct sourcing. And I always laugh. I've always joked at that. Curation is talent acquisition activity. So it's sourcing recruiting, right? So let's get that off the table. Call it what
another fancy word.
Yeah, it's all marketing. so it is what it is. And so as soon as you started adding the people and doing the curation, you started to see the success rate. because I've often been quoted saying, I haven't seen an algorithm beat a recruiter at the last mile.
Yeah. Right?
And so an algorithm is great in matching skills and getting it to the ballpark, but getting it over the last mile to closing a deal and making sure they're cultural fit, language fit, project fit, all of those little things, a person is actually helping close those deals. And you're starting to see more and more success in direct sourcing programs when they add the curation. So when you think of it as an owner of a staffing business, today your model is, I get a rec and I fill it, and I'm competing against 25 other firms for that rec. And so your probability of closure is very low, but, and that's why you're making 25 points. So take the percentage down in terms of your margin, but you're getting a higher success rate because you're a strategic partner of that client of yours and getting more of their roles that you're the only one working on. So, you know, thinking about it as something you should be looking at in your service offering to your clients is important because, you know, the old adage, if someone's thinking about it and if you don't do it, someone else will create a service offering. And
yeah, or it's happening already right underneath your nose. Yeah, that's a pretty cool strategy to take. And I think it will prove to be the most agile and fitting ones that lead the pack on this. And it's funny how you see the staffing, especially the mega conglomerates of staffing companies, evolve into the MSP arm, the RPO arm, the direct sourcing and payroll, and sometimes even EOR arm. So many of them are kind of light years ahead against the small, medium sized staffing agency. But to that end, there could be more relevance for them to go in, have that personal relationship, be able to take an RPO-esque approach and teach them how to curate. After all, they know a thing or two on that fancy buzzword, right?
You got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you touched on one of the things here that I thought was interesting, and that's automation and AI and what that's doing to potentially enhance the life of the recruiter and everything that they're about. Or, you know, I was reading an article on Staffing Industry Analyst earlier this year, top 12 predictions on what they had for 2022. And I think number 11 or 12 out there was that the recruiter is no more. Like, there's not going to be this need for recruiting as much. Anything that you think about that, or any thoughts around that in general?
Well, it's automation and AI is coming, and it continues to get better and better. And so, although I joke, I haven't seen a algorithm that's beaten a recruiter on the last mile, I see a algorithms and technology beating recruiters on the first 20 miles, right? So when you think about the heavy lifting in the old days, when I used to recruit as an IT recruiter, I tease.
Put out ads in the paper, Jeff.
It was paper files on a cart. Someone would come to my desk and I'd go through right? Or hang out at the fax machine. Remember those things, fax machines? Maybe you don't even remember fax machines, but you'd hang out at a fax machine and hope that, you know, the mainframe programmer resume came across and you got it first, right? And so you've seen technology evolve on that first 20 miles. And that was back in the day, getting it to the short list of 10 that you wanted to call and talk to was a huge amount of effort. Technology has really accelerated that and made it easier to get to the 10 you want to talk to quicker, right? And so it's really... automation has helped that, not only with better searching capability, but even interacting and bringing workers through the process of shortlisting them to the 10. So it used to be technology would get it to the first 25 and you'd still have to talk to all 25 to get it to your 10, to 3, to the 2 you submit, and then the 1 that gets interviewed. Now, chatbots and AI are getting better to ask certain questions on resumes to get, you know, really give the person behind the curtain of technology a good idea of that shortlist of 10, who are the 2 that should be submitted. And so that they're really only having to talk to the three that they're going to submit, or the three of the two that they're going to submit to the client. And so it's really accelerated it. And things like chatbots and texting candidates on questions off of resumes and things like that are really narrowing it down to give the recruiters good quality information so that they can go, okay, yeah, I'm going to submit these two of the shortlist now, right? Quicker. Because the MSP model too, really, it was blasted out, throw whatever came in as quickly as possible because they close off the rec after there was 20 resumes submitted, right? And so speed became a big issue and you needed to be faster than the next person. And so utilizing these technologies that can get that speed to submission is really important.
Yeah. And then I start to get into many different areas like, wow, everything that you're saying and how critical of a role the intermediary is playing within this process to further enhance their role, their monotonous task that they once had to do maybe 5 to 7 years ago, and even mimicking that level of rapport with candidates. It's truly fascinating. But to that end, I go into the mind of, well, this DE&I initiative and all these rumblings that you hear on how they want to open up the sourcing of applied candidates, how much that can be complemented by what we know is happening with AI and automation. But Jeff, alas, we are wrapping up today's podcast. I feel like we could continue with this for many more hours. But one of the things I wanted to ask you of as my last question, and think about this as Jeff Nugent, the man that understands workforce and workforce ecosystem, but also the father, and at a personal level, when we think about generational impacts, the millennials, the boomers on the way out for the most part, millennials, Gen Zers are now here, largest part of the workforce. There was a study that showed the average age of the worker is going to be 35 in a couple of years, right? What's the average age of the worker now? So in your mind, based on what you know, on what you see happening, on all of these trends, on you being a father every single day, what are some of those preparatory measures that you think is going to be so vastly different from any form of traditional working model that we once were attuned to, because this new generation is here and here to stay?
Yeah. Well, you know, we talked about technology, right?
Yeah.
Not only in our industry as recruiting and staffing and contingent workforce. So, you know, the trend to have technology and STEM in your background and education is always, and it's overblown to a certain respect and everybody talks about it, but it's just, that's table stakes. You gotta know technology, and there's going to be tons of jobs in that area. Mm-hmm. Customer service and sales. You know, when technology breaks down, who's supporting it and how well they support it and get to a human is still going to be important. And then these things, and I'm waving my five fingers on each of my two hands, physical work. Yeah. You still have to fix things, build things, physically manufacture and show up to maintain things. And there's a real need for those workers and a real shortage of those types of workers.
Yeah.
And I see for the, you know, foreseeable future, although there's talk of we're going to have a robot for everything, building things, moving things physically, supporting things when the automation technology breaks down is incredibly important. And so, you know, getting in apprenticeships and tradespeople and those types of things are the jobs of the future that, you know, we've also trended away as an overly educated society from wanting to get your hands dirty. And so, you know, you're going to see the need for those types of jobs. And that's me as a father thinking that way, mm-hmm. But also as a business person in the recruiting realms of where there's talent shortages, because where there's a talent shortage and high demand, there's opportunity, right? Around that.
Technology and skilled labor. Those are going to be the ones that are in demand, guys. You guys heard it here first. Awesome. Jeff, where can we find you and get in touch with you?
Well, I'm a LinkedIn guy, so you can always find me on LinkedIn as Jeff Nugent, and then you know you'll hear more of me as we start to launch independently.ai, and I work on a few other projects. So you know you can always get in touch with me through LinkedIn, or you know even just network with Angela, and she'll
I'll connect you guys. I will connect you guys. Jeff, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Thank you for our listeners as well for tuning into today's episode. Time is honestly the most valuable gift that we can give one another these days, especially in this fast-paced information age that we are living and breathing in. So we thank you guys for spending some time with us, and you as well, Jeff. And guys, definitely, without a doubt, part two, we got to line it up for sure with the Nuge.
Love to. Thanks, Angela. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we'll see you on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.